This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Wallara, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty Cornford, Creative Director here at Uniting Heart and Soul, and joining me of course is the Reverend Vanessa Williams-Henke, Senior Pastor here at Uniting Heart and Soul. This week on the show we're joined by the Reverend Dr. Michael Jensen. Michael is an author, theologian, lecturer, and a fellow podcaster, and has been the minister at St. Mark's Anglican in Darling Point since 2013. We were super excited to have him on the show, and had a fascinating discussion with him about young people in the church, some of the recent changes in the Anglican Church in Australia, and a bunch of other topics that I was dying to ask him about. Michael's podcast, With All Due Respect, that he co-hosts with Megan Paldetois, recently turned 4, and if you enjoy this show, then I can highly recommend that you go and check that one out too. Enjoy the episode. Hello, welcome to the show. We have a very special guest with us, Michael Jensen. Do you want to just introduce yourself briefly for everyone?
It's great to be here. And I mean, really great. We've been trying to line this up for quite some time. And so I'm very excited to be here. My name's Michael Jensen. I'm the minister, the rector at St. Mark's Anglican Church, Darling Point, which is kind of neighbouring parish to where Ness is. And I've been there for 9 years. And so I'm still new. And really loving it. And I do a bit of, writing, teaching theology as well, that sort of stuff, keeping myself busy.
Is that at Moore College?
I used to teach at Moore College, but now I do some stuff through the Sydney College of Divinity and some other things as well.
Okay, awesome. So hang on a minute. Hang on. That was the dodgiest intro to our next to royalty, Anglican Rev.
Sorted out now.
So I'm sorry, mate. I'm going to clean that. Stop. You're also too bloody humble is my feeling on this. So I'm just going to say, in our presence today, Jonty and friends, we have, drum roll please. Do it.
I'll add one in. Sure.
That. We have the Reverend Dr. Michael Jensen, thank you very much, lecturer and former professor of Moore College, Sydney. Have I got that piece right?
Yeah, more or less.
You're an author.
Yeah.
Of a bazillion books. You didn't drop that one into the introduction.
No.
Thank you very much. And your daddy.
Yeah.
Happened to be the most reverend Peter Jensen.
That's right. So he was the...
What is the... How do you become the most
well,
version?
See, this is an Anglican thing, is that we've got... partly because we used to be, you know, we're the state church in England. There's a whole bunch of titles, which are a bit ridiculous when you're supposed to be representing the humble Lord Jesus Christ. I've got to say it. But an archbishop is a most reverend. A dean is a very reverend. A bishop is a right reverend. And an ordinary minister is just a reverend. But an archdeacon is a venerable.
A venerable. That's incredible. I love it. I love the idea of, does Dad at lunches want to be gone by, does he want to be referred to?
No, he's a very informal.
Humble guy?
Yeah, I think he does. This is not really, there's an easy fit with this.
Yeah, wow.
So that's a good thing, I think.
I love it. I like the most reverend. I think it's really cool. I'd want to kiss his ring. Do you do that?
Well, no, he doesn't have one. So we're fairly evangelical Anglicans. So we don't do a lot of, we don't really go for the kind of whole bells and smells and ecclesiastical haberdashery and millinery, you know, weird hats.
So you don't do the costuming?
Not that much. I kind of put on a robe, you know, kind of white robe, and that's enough.
Do you do a white robe on a Sunday when you preach?
Yeah, at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I put my collar on for both my morning services, but for our 8 o'clock choral service, choral communion, it's a Book of Common Prayer from 1662, so kind of fits.
How beautiful. Yeah, it's really lovely. I'm a bit jealous of that because we're not very high church in the Uniting Church, and I get really jealous of the costumes and the outfits that the Anglicans and the Catholics. I mean, our brothers and sisters in the Catholic Church, mate, do they rock the hats?
They frock up, yeah.
Don't they?
They do.
That pink, you and I would look good in that pink.
Yeah.
That's the bishop pink, isn't it? It's like a purpley pink.
Anglican bishops Anglican bishops do, yeah. Oh. But I've got a very florid complexion. It wouldn't suit me
at all. Wouldn't go for you?
Suit you.
Yeah, I'd probably need extra lippy or specific Chanel colour for that. But I do like it. I think it's really a fancy, great look. You also, Michael, are a part of the podcast entrepreneur world.
Who isn't?
Yeah, that's right. Do you want to talk about that?
Boy, everyone and their dog's got a podcast these days. But part of the reason I'm excited to talk to you today is I've been listening to your podcast with Megan Paldetoit, With All Due Respect, which just turned 4, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, congratulations. That's great. Yeah, for 4 years. We've been going for what? 6 or 7 months now.
Yeah, just a minute.
Yeah. So I think whether or not consciously, I think listening to not just your podcast, but a bunch of Christian podcasts was part of the inspiration to start this thing. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's actually quite exciting for me to have, and hopefully we'll have Megan as well at some point to come on the show. But yeah, if people haven't heard or listened to With All Due Respect, highly, highly recommend it as well.
Put that in the show notes.
So congratulations, terrific. 4 years.
Terrific.
Yeah, incredible. It's been inspirational to listen to your work. Yeah. But among all those terrific things that make up the sum total of who you are, Michael, you're also a daddy and a husband.
Yeah.
You've got a packet of kids.
Yeah, we've got 4 kids.
Yeah.
The youngest is 16. Oh. So it's close to 6 adults in the house these days. Of course, young people these days don't move out of home.
Tell me about it.
I think they're going to stay.
Yeah.
And, I've been married to Catherine for 29 and three quarters years.
Wow.
So big anniversary coming up. And that's great. I'm very blessed.
Yeah, congratulations. I've been married for 33, so I know the effort that it takes. I think for every couple that has been married for this length of time, I mean, it's a big deal, isn't it?
Oh, it really is,
so much goes on in that period of time and raising children. I've just had one daughter get married just this year.
Yeah, I've been following you on Facebook and I've seen the pictures. Yeah, yeah. It looks lovely.
But it does. It is lovely. I would recommend not marrying your kid, though. I actually did the service and that was – I wish I just had been mum.
Yeah.
So I wish a rev buddy had actually said to me, Ness, don't do the thing, just sit back and be the mum. But because that was a lot to hold, I think, on the day, because I was really emotional. But it's a very special time. But then they leave and then you're left with a whole nother change in the situation, in the dynamic. And Rob and I are just starting to re-know each other again and start to have conversations outside the children. Yes, sorry, Ginger and Aurora. Yes, we talk about other things other than you now. Because you know that when you go on date night, Michael, it's always about catch up on the kids and then FYI, you're just about to pay the bill and then how are you, darling?
Yeah, that's right. You know that? That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a mutual project, I guess.
It is a mutual project.
Stakeholders meeting.
Yeah, stakeholders meeting. I like that.
That's right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure.
Now, that was a better intro, Jonty.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you can do
the intros next time. After that long intro, I have to ask you, Michael, I don't know what order these are coming out, but I recently was in your position on this podcast when Ness was interviewing me and I hated every second of self-promotion and that sort of... How do you feel about being told that you're excellent by other people? Do you enjoy it or is it like a... Because that'll gauge how much we. I mean,
I do like it, but then I feel embarrassed to say so.
Oh yeah. No.
Well, no. I think receiving compliments is actually a really difficult skill.
Yeah.
And it does take humility to receive a compliment well. So I think it's really nice that people say encouraging things, but I never want. I recognize anything. Anything I have is not my own. So I think that's a very helpful thing too. And also, I think in ministry, you get a lot of brickbats. So it's worth, it's worth receiving encouragement in the way that it's intended, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome.
I do too.
So one of the main things that I wanted to talk to you about that I'm really, really curious to hear your thoughts on, I have quite a few Anglican friends, and I've been hearing a lot about what's going on within the structure of the Anglican Church in Australia and the diocese. And I've heard just through little snippets of people that there's a bit of change going on. And I'd be curious just to ask you if you could explain for our listeners what's going on in the Anglican Church at the moment with this with the change that's happening at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's perhaps not as exciting as people think at one level. And that is, I think it's been painted in the media as a split in the Anglican Church. I don't think it is a split. It's the setting up of a structure to enable people to remain identifiably Anglicans, that can retain their Anglican identity when they feel that the diocese that they're in no longer has that identity in a way that they can accept. And that's particularly come up over issues, as you might expect in the church, over issues of sexuality. That's been an issue that's really been very difficult for the worldwide church. I understand the pain and the complexity of this, but it's an important issue. So I get that. I get why it's so complex and why we found it so difficult. And now, I'm a Protestant, not a Catholic. So Catholics, I think, have a stronger view that the church should be structurally unified. I tend to believe that unity is a spiritual gift, a gift of the Spirit, and so it cuts across church and denominational boundaries. Sometimes we have to do the structural thing differently so we can walk up, because we need to walk apart sometimes in order to find the spiritual unity we might have. And so I'm not that alarmed by a new structure in that way, as I wouldn't call it a division in quite that way. Sometimes we just have to, in good faith, recognise you can't have this and that, these two integrities in the same denomination. Now, I know the Uniting Church has tried to walk a different path, and I guess that's as difficult as it is for us too. So long as people, I think, keep in touch and keep talking, then I think that'll be the thing.
Absolutely, and that actually really resonates with me, because I think one of the things I value about the Uniting Church is you can travel down the North Shore train line and hop off at any one point and pop into any Uniting Church, and the theology will be slightly different to that community. And that part of how the Uniting Church has been structured is that it enables different churches and congregations to hold those slightly different theologies and values within the same structural thing. So I think that resonates to me as a similar, not the same, but a similar expression of difference within the unity of our, like those core things.
The big tension for the church from the New Testament on is what's core and what's not core.
Yeah.
And that's part of this discussion. Is a doctrine of marriage a core belief, or is it a secondary one? And that's kind of contested territory, and that's what's the issue. So I do think there's important issues at stake. This isn't just a matter of liturgical differences or stylistic differences. And so I think it's a measure of taking people's views seriously that you sometimes say, okay, well, there needs to be a partner here in order perhaps to find a unity which only the Spirit will bring.
Diversity and unity, I think the Uniting Church we've struggled with that, and it's been a very scary time for our denomination as well, and I think that's why I got anxious for the Anglican friends that you would be going through that, because it became quite divisive for us, didn't it? Divisive at times for us, and people said and did really dumb shit basically, and was hurtful to not only
on both sides.
Definitely.
I think people get caught up in this. Whenever issues of whether it's sexual ethic or exactly like you say, deciding whether things are core issues or secondary, I think people often get, in my experience in the communities that I'm a part of, people get trapped in this like binary of you're either in or you're out, and you have to pick a side, which is inherently divisive and unhelpful for communities. So I guess like you said, I think it was 2018. Was that the same-sex marriage
Sounds good.
Vote, and that then passed down through the United Church, and we had this whole thing. And I remember the communities that I was a part of at that time. It was very tense in a lot of times. But a lot of times there was depending on which communities you were a part of, there was a real sense of unity. So, what in your experience, what's it been like over the last sort of six to 8 months?
Well, I'd say mirroring sort of thing. I would say very similar sorts of things. And by the way, this has been brewing for decades, so
yes, yeah.
I wouldn't say that what we've seen in the last year is new. Mm-hmm. Certainly in global Anglicanism, and certainly in Australia, mm-hmm. there are unfortunate things said on both sides, dismissive and contemptuous things said on both sides. I think the manner of our disagreement is almost as important as the disagreement. I think you can strongly disagree with someone. You know, very strong. You know, I think you'd be pretty serious in your disagreement. You don't have to be a jerk about it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
100%.
I think, and as I say, I think sometimes it's actually easier and more clearer for there to be a parting of the ways structurally, and that's fine.
Mm. Mm, yeah,
that's fine. But there's a sort of integrity to that. I think that's fine. But nobody has to be a jerk in the meantime.
Yeah.
And Michael, totally. So I can understand. So will this new... is it a new presbytery?
No,
a new synod?
Just to kind of give the hopefully not too dull explanation of Anglican. So Anglican church structure sort of mirrors the Catholic Church, but sort of doesn't. So, of course, Catholic Church is very centralised, based in Rome. The Pope in Rome tells you what to do and you do it. That's a very...
Sounds like Hillsong.
My poor Catholic brothers and sisters don't like that, but... it's very centralised.
Yeah.
We aren't quite as centralised. Each nation's Anglican church is in fellowship with other Anglican churches around the world, and the focus of that is the Archbishop of Canterbury. So it's all kind of centred on England, which is the home of the Anglican, original home.
Nice
of the
guy.
Anglican church. Yeah, he's good. So the Australian church is its own thing. So sometimes people used to say to us, the Queen's the head of your church. Well, she's not. She's the head of the church in England, but not in Australia. Mm. So, and that church in Australia is divided into units called dioceses. I hope everyone isn't turning off. And
no, they're on.
Right
I'm
now.
On. Oh, I'm learning something. Yeah, it's great.
A diocese, and again, in Australia, being a kind of federal country, we are. They're pretty independent, but they meet every now and again for a national synod where everyone from Australia gets together and make collective decisions. And the different dioceses of the Australian church actually have quite different characters. It's very interesting when you talk to people in other organisations like the Labor Party or the Greens or whatever it might be. They're very different characters all around the different states.
Of course.
And it's true of the Anglican church. And so there's a measure of difference and tension that happens at the national level. What's happened is we've decided that... some of the dioceses which are less conservative, there are more conservative members, traditional in their views on marriage, who want to remain Anglican but feel that their dioceses have become too progressive. Mm. And so they have said, we're going to form a sort of diocese without territory and be overlooked by a bishop and in fellowship and recognised by other Anglicans so they can remain in the Anglican fold, as it were, but not formally part of the Anglican Church of Australia. I hope that kind of makes...
Well, yeah, it does.
It does. No, it does.
A little bit later on.
Yeah. A test? Yes. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
No, that's really helpful because I think it's for me, it's been a really interesting process of trying to, in understanding this, separate the sometimes very personal... reflections on what's happening from people that I really value.
Yeah.
And not that that's different to what the structural thing is that's going on, but being able to separate a lot of the emotion and stuff from the structural things that are changing. So that was really helpful and I hope helpful for listeners as well.
And I think the newspaper doesn't paint it very well, does
no,
it?
No, I find the newspapers...
unhelpful.
I found this very unhelpful. I found that our media is spectacularly uneducated about church. I'm sure you found this too.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan particularly of Scott Morrison or the Liberal Party, or I'm not a Pentecostal, but I felt this reporting of Pentecostalism, for instance, is just ignorant in the last few years. Mm. And likewise here, they tend to take a Catholic paradigm and whack it on top of the Anglican Church and report it that way. Mm. Or they just ring up one person and get that one person and... Mm. So, yeah, I think it's a real shame because religion's so important to so many people that our media reports it so badly.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think when I've spoken to people about the Anglican situation that's happening, I think people automatically mention things like, oh, that's a Sydney Anglicans. Anglicans, you poor bastards, cop it. You really do. Yeah,
sometimes deservedly.
Yeah. And then it's often about female clergy, and then it's often about same-sex marriage and
essentially
queer clergy.
Yes, essentially the Sydney Diocese, the Anglican Church in Australia, is been historically quite evangelical, low church, so not very formal in its liturgy. Really interested in sharing Jesus with the community, and also but quite conservative on the Bible, and particularly sees the Bible as its authority.
Yep.
And that puts it in tension with some other Anglicans who are more, you might say, liberal or progressive, see religious experience or tradition as being more important.
Mm.
And so there's a kind of a difference in method, a difference in kind of our sources of authority.
Mm.
And so that's where a lot of the tension that's the root of the tension, if you like. But what's really interesting is actually that the Anglican Church, as I'm sure with many other denominations, is growing massively in Africa and Southeast Asia. And so while the numbers are dwindling in many parts of the Anglo-Saxon world, Anglicanism itself is
going gangbusters. Yeah, wow. So. Isn't that amazing? That's a nice segue into youth ministry. It seems like you guys have the market share on youth ministry. What is it that you guys do in the Anglican Church that attracts all the youth to you? What is the deal, brother?
Glad you think so. I think we've actually seen a diminishment in Sydney of our youth segment in the last decade, last 15 years even. And so we've had a lot of strong talks about resourcing and funding youth ministry. I would like to think it's not about sort of running a great show or giving them lots of sugar or pizza, but actually I hope it's a lot of really dedicated people putting in time caring for young people as special and as treating them with the respect that as people made in the image of God, people in need of Christ, and so I think we put a lot of resources into doing that. But I think we could do a heck of a lot better. I feel youth ministry at the moment is really, really tough. Actually, I think there's a lot of low level of trust from the community to the
good
churches,
point. Yep,
especially over young people.
Yeah,
and
rightly so.
Yeah, we deserve some of that.
Yep, definitely, all of us.
I think there's a phrase that I hear sometimes. For context, for people that may not know, they're listening. I was a youth worker for a number of, three years at previous church that I worked at, and the phrase that I heard all the time was, "Young people are the future of the church. Young people are the future of the church," and I always wanted to scream, be like, "No! Young people are the church."
Yes.
And I think, that it's really tough when, if we're completely honest, the median age of churchgoers is rising and has been for a while now. To change that paradigm of, well, let's bring the young people in because they're the future of our church, as opposed to no, well, let's go and be present in young people's lives because their lives are just as valuable and just as present in the life of the church. And also, I think often we're having these conversations in my community at the moment. It's like, how valuable is the 6:30 p.m. on a Sunday night? How valuable is that model to young people as opposed to buy them dinner on a Tuesday night or meet them after school, go have coffee or what, like, and not valuing those spaces any less than trying to pull them into a church congregation. Because my experience often is that God is present in those people's lives, not in the church building often. It's in those
100%
gray spaces around the edges of the church. So it's a really important discussion that needs to keep happening in all churches.
It takes a sense of adventure and a bit of risk, and courage from older people that things won't be the way they would like them, and also I think giving giving young people. I think, by the way, intergenerational ministry is what we need to recapture, because our society is so so segmented by the market. You know, everybody's a demographic now.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't think you guys are in my demographic. I don't think I have anything in common with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So it's so segmented, and yet one of the great gifts God's given us in community is actually our multi-generational, our family structure, if you like, as a church. And we think that we have to be cool to get young people in, and so we despair. And actually, no, young people prefer our authentic selves, you know, 100%. No matter who we are.
I mean,
there's nothing wrong with someone in their 50s or 60s doing youth ministry.
And just relevant. We just need to be relevant.
Well, I think there's often, in my experience, this expectation that the it's not always older people, but people that are not, let's say, not the same demographic as the younger people, a need for them to teach the younger people as almost like a ladder to where they are, which in a lot of cases is incredibly unhelpful, because culturally and all different areas, they're just completely different. And that's great, because diversity in age, but in culture, in sexuality, and all these different things, that's the reality of life. And trying to like put these things into groups and like, well, these people need to talk to these people because they will transition into this person later on. It's like, well, no, let's meet people where they are and just have an impact in their life. And like, if you can be that one person that tells them that they're valuable in the eyes of God as who they are, not as who they want them to be in 10 years in the church, as who they are now.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry if I get fired up about this. Yeah, I feel very strongly.
Settle your jets, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
As you go. Can I ask you about your Rough Edges ministry? Because what we do at Uniting Heart and Soul is we work in the mental health care space with Wellness HQ and provide free counselling through our the use of a psychologist, which has proved to be a really amazing thing. And we're almost at capacity now with Julie's work, and we link in with local doctors in the area and get some referral also from Wayside and other churches in the area. So I'd love to work with you in that space, because I don't think many churches are actually providing this kind of deeply required work for people suffering complex trauma. We do lots of feed them, shelter them, and give them love and nurture, but we don't address the core issue of their mental health, and we often then find them back on the streets, don't we? But your Rough Edges ministry, can you talk to us about that and do a bit of a sneaky push on that?
I'd have to say it's not my Rough Edges ministry. It's the ministry that belongs to St John's at Darlinghurst. Mm. But we are in partnership with St John's. So that's an Anglican church in the suburb next to us, next to both Ness and I, just for the listeners. So we both live in the wealthiest suburbs in Australia.
Yeah, we are. With the highest amount of domestic violence.
And also 12 times the national average of cocaine use.
Oh, that explains it, doesn't it?
That's why this interview has gone so quickly. No. Not us.
Hang on a minute. Yeah, I'm good.
My goodness, wipe to the bathroom here. I don't want to go there. But this is an area with a lot of secrets. You know, there's high walls, but still the same problems. Yeah. So our partnership's been with St John's, which is of course it's an area which is traditionally where there's a lot of homelessness, alongside some gentrification as well. So we've had this partnership with Rough Edges. Rough Edges has a ministry, a cafe ministry, essentially to people who are doing it tough, whether it's living on the streets, which many people are, just down in Woolloomooloo, you can see them, which is not a kilometre from here, maybe 1,500 metres, but also people who are just, you know, in social housing and what have you. They've also opened a unit called, a ministry called the Banksia Women, which is about helping women in the aftermath of domestic violence. So it's not a shelter, it's a kind of a help, I suppose, a support ministry. And that's been, I think, has been a really much needed one, ministry. And again, it's not, it's our image of the typical domestic violence victim is, of course, is a person in a in a working class area, you know, with a husband in a white in a blue singlet.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. And no. I'm here to tell you that people with very, very high salaries and net worths, etc., can be both the victims and the perpetrators of domestic abuse.
100%.
And so I've referred people to there who've been involved in my parish or mm-hmm. have come to visit me. And I'm just so glad they're there because we think it's just all hunky-dory. We don't have that sort of support here. Mm. I'm so glad you're doing the mental health work here because people do have large salaries and massive trauma and deep mental health issues.
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes because of.
Yeah.
Or they've got their money. It's actually an outworking of their
100%
broken personality.
That's it. Yeah, for sure. I think we've got an opportunity for a collab, Reverend Doctor.
Certainly, yeah.
I think we should get together and have a bit of a chat about this.
I'm going to be good.
And ecumenically
this is like a Shark Tank meeting.
Yeah, it is a Shark Tank. Yeah, I love that, Jonty.
It's a business pitch.
Yeah, I think we can do a thing, Michael.
I think there's a thing.
There's definitely something to help our community and to not want to reinvent the wheel because while you've got a handle on that space and we've got a very niche handle on what we're doing, then to plug those bits in together, I think we could do an incredible thing for the community at large and just be the church with the capital C.
Yeah, there's a lot of lostness, surprisingly. Yeah. People are lost.
Yeah, absolutely. We linked in with Dress for Success as well. So we had Lux Markets here where we got given these beautiful outfits by designers in the area. Shout out to Moss and Spy. Incredible generosity, beautiful clothing, and donated a whole range of beautiful clothes for women who are needing to get back into the workforce. And so they dress them, help them prepare for interviews, help them get their CVs up to date and engage them in an interview process to help them get confidence back into that space to be able to get out there into the workforce. So that was a really wonderful thing to be a part of that. But I think there's a huge opportunity for us to share.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and to then do greater work within the community. Yeah, across our two denominations, regardless of how we feel about women in the pulpit, I just had to put that in, and whether how we feel about gay marriage, it doesn't matter because we just continue to be Jesus, don't we?
Yeah.
And to be the hands and feet of Christ into our community.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
Here.
There was, I don't know if you listened to the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill
I did.
Podcast.
I did.
We should talk about them in more depth another time. But
sweat.
Just there was a quote in, I think it was one of the bonus episodes, someone was talking about. It was in reference to something else, not the domestic violence issue, but this metaphor of a farmer who is farming the land in a way that's really unhelpful to the point where an entire hill has been ruined. Mm. And the solution to that cannot be as big as the problem because the hillside itself has already been ruined. And I think they were talking about this in reference to abuse scandals within leadership in the church. So it's a very different topic, but I think I was thinking about that while listening to you guys talk about this. And I wish I could remember who this guy was. Maybe I'll link it afterwards. But and he was saying that when we have issues at such a scale, like if we're talking about domestic abuse in places like the eastern suburbs, the solutions cannot and will not be as large as the problem. The solutions are small and personal and gradually unfolding. Mm. And I think when I look at some of the things that you guys are doing in your communities, they strike me not as us trying to solve the problem in one fell swoop because it's not going to happen.
No.
And it's about being that more gradually unfolding and interpersonal way of solving those problems.
Are you saying that me just kind of tweeting things doesn't actually change the culture?
Look,
what you're saying? I mean, I think you've got a real point here. That is, I think we feel daunted by the kind of, oh my goodness, the culture is like this, you know, we have to change the culture. It's not Christian anymore or whatever it might be. Or we see a problem like domestic abuse and the sheer volume of numbers involved in that. But you're right, it's actually the sort of close, up personal, hand-to-hand fighting that I think church communities do and actually do really well in very unsung ways. I think God's grace has worked and continues to work marvellously and extraordinary things in quiet ways throughout our community. Mm. So I feel encouraged by that.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I might have to go back and re-listen to that episode. Mm. if I'm up for it. They're pretty heavy sometimes. Yeah.
I'm really encouraged talking to you. I feel really glad that we met and did this today because I think our community of listeners needed to hear your perspective, and I think that's wonderful because they'll then go and tell their friends. They've heard from lovely Michael Jensen and this is what he reckons, and I think that that's important that we spread this information through the Christian communities and beyond. So, you know, shut the gossip channels down and...
Yeah, here I am.
That's what the facts are. Yeah, it's brilliant. No, it's real. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, no, my absolute pleasure.
Amazing. You're doing great work up the road. Bit jealous of you. FYI.
I'll give you the list of the churches I'm jealous of, and then you can be jealous of them too. Yeah. I mean, the thing is with churches, I think they're like swans, you know. It might look polished from the outside sometimes, but underneath the surface.
Oh, yeah, a bit of that.
It's all held together by string.
Yeah, and I've got bloody Reverend Simon Manchester next to me pushing out his, you know, magnificently posh sermons on a Sunday.
Yeah, he's a great preacher.
He's amazing. I listen to Simon on my way to preaching. I've got to stop doing that because I get really stressed and I think, I can't do that. I don't sound like him. Help me, Lord.
But you're you.
That's good. Yes, that'd be boring if you sounded like him. Yeah.
We've got a whole plethora of different styles in the East, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's so good that your ministry has come in, and I'm so glad that COVID is over and now you can shine because that was just, you know, that really sucked. You kind of arrived and COVID happened, and then and it's just been visibly transformative from the outside.
Yeah,
so it's great to see.
We can do it from the inside also.
It's always a work in progress, and I always get skeptical and want to push deeper and ask questions when people front that their church is amazing and perfect. Because I kind of go, I'm sure it's great and that's fantastic, but no church is perfect. The church is made by
people. It'd be perfect
people.
If it didn't have any people.
Exactly. All churches are run by people.
That from Michael.
And people are not perfect. Yeah. Do you have anything else that you wanted to ask?
I think I'm great.
I think that's awesome. That pretty much does us. Yeah. So.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. Before we finish, though, we do a section called Gratitude, where we ask, if we have a guest, we'll ask them, where we talk a little bit about something that we are grateful for amidst the grit of life, which is where this word gratitude comes from. So before we... real quick before we finish up, what are you grateful for at the moment?
I'm grateful for friends. I've been blessed with really good long-term friendships with male and female friends. Of course, I'm grateful for my family, but I just think friends are such an extraordinary blessing. I mean, I go down to the cafe at Bondi Beach two or three times a week, and there's a bunch of us that just sit there and, you know, we solve all the world's problems.
Yeah.
We sit there and say, oh, this would be a great podcast, you know. And we don't. it's such a great mental health break. Yeah. It's such a great support, and it's free.
Mm.
It's absolutely free, except you have to buy them dinner every now and again.
It's supervision in a way, isn't it? It's just incredible.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, I couldn't do without friendships. Yeah. They're a great blessing in my life.
Yeah. I'd agree. I love that. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining.
Pleasure.
We will see you next week when I'm not sure what's happening next week because we're all out of order because we're doing these, we're banking them up. But thanks once again for joining us. We will see you next week on the show. I'm Jonty, and we've had Michael.
Yay!
See you next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed our discussion with Michael, you can go and check out the podcast With All Due Respect, hosted by Michael and Megan Powell Dutoit. If you want to support this podcast, you can give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to us on. Or, if you're watching us on YouTube, throw us a like and subscribe to make sure that you get each new episode as soon as they come out every Friday. You can find us on socials, and you can send us an email at filthyhopepod@gmail.com. Next week on the show, we're going to be hearing from another artist, my brother, Marty Cornford. If you want to familiarise yourself with his work, you can check out his band, Afterthought, wherever you get your music. We'll see you next week, and in the meantime, remember, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.